CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
Thank you, Dave Herpes Levinson.
That's not fair. Did he sting? No.
He asked for it.
Yeah, let's. It's radio. We have good faces for radio, okay? Let's just keep it like that.
CliffCentral.com. It is Friday morning. Sex Talk with John T and Tamar and my good friend Charles Heyman. Charles, good morning.
Hey, how's it, John T?
To be with you this morning. Unradio, unscripted, and I have no doubt this morning is most definitely uncensored.
Unclothed.
Well, it could happen, you know. You never know. We might have to celebrate because we're back in the big studio where we started this journey.
This
nearly
is a really
3 years ago. It's nearly 3 years.
Well done, John T.
Every Friday we have sat here and spoken about sex and pleasure and all sorts of wonderful things. Isn't
yeah.
It? So cool.
Very.
It really is. So let's do this because I really like this word. We have to just get kind of organized here. Where is it?
New equipment.
There we go. It's been a while since we've been here. Why isn't it playing?
I knew it's a new studio.
Philippa GM.
Today's dirty dictionary word is
peenicorn.
Dirty dictionary word.
Peenicorn. Any idea what a peenicorn is?
I'm just thinking about this. I have a reasonably good vocabulary usually,
yes.
And I have absolutely no idea.
So take a guess at what a peenicorn is.
It's a teeny weeny weeny penis of unicorns. No?
No.
Okay.
You're kind of in the realm, but only half.
Okay. Half of teeny weeny penis of unicorn.
Yeah, I would have thought it'd be a I don't know. A brand of mealy that is specifically shaped like a penis.
Okay, that's a little bit too literal. You've got to be a little bit more...
Peenicorn.
A little bit more...
penis of a horse.
Penis of a
horse. Yeah, penis,
yeah,
peenicorn.
There's a connection with penis of a horse, like in size terms.
Size terms.
So, message us on... WhatsApp 079-748-2090.
Remember, it's not private.
Tell us
everybody
what
can
you
see it.
Think a peenicorn is. Anything else you want to share with us this morning? WhatsApp 079-748-2090. We are on Twitter.
Yep.
SexTalk_CliffC at Sensual Guide. At what's your Twitter handle? Charles.
Charles Heyman.
Charles Heyman. H-E-I-M-A-N.
One word.
So, tell us what you think about erotic photography. That was really...
Yeah.
That was... You could do a peenicorn blowjob. You could do a peenicorn blowjob.
Go for it.
So, that's kind of the
God,
clue.
God, I was going to tweet it just now. Okay.
Very good. So, I think next time we do a show on oral sex, you have to come and see if you can blowjob
a
mic.
Very loose jaws. Very loose.
Absolutely.
How do you do it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like...
You know, it's a gift. What can you say? It's a gift.
My mom taught me on Super Chomp.
So that's kind of an interesting thing. If you could dislocate your jaw at will, could you give a better blowjob?
I'm waiting to be 90 with no teeth. I'm like, honey, we're going to have so much fun.
This is... Can I say this? It's in the realm of Levinson's show.
But you know what, John T? In 50 years' time or whatever, you know, when I'm going to be 90, they're going to have such techniques of virtual reality. All you will need is my mouth with no teeth. I would look like Cindy Crawford. You know, I would look beautiful in the virtual reality. I'll be 30 again. And I have no teeth, and so it's amazing.
Would you want to be 30 again?
No. But I would like to not look 19. That's a good start. Okay. Maybe I can stop at 55, 60.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to be 30 again. Would you want to be 30 again?
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
No, I think I would. I would. But with my current knowledge set.
That's not possible.
Yeah, that's the problem.
You can't. That's cheating.
See, that's the problem.
But you know, John D., since I met you, and it's not to compliment you, it's just the reality. Since I met you and I started my journey, I'm actually okay. If I had to take a time machine, I would go there, but I won't go before that.
Hmm. Well, I have to tell you, I'm 52.
You don't look like.
And I'm having the best sex that I've ever had in my life, bar none.
Not only with yourself.
Not only with myself.
Not at all.
No. So, shy. The best sex I've ever had in my life.
That's amazing.
I am learning more about sex and love and pleasure in the last couple of months than I have in the last, I don't know how many years.
That's a true story.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
It is the most incredible space to be in. It really is.
Gives a lot of understanding of what is really good. Sex is about knowing yourself. It's about journey. It's about also
and so much.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that time brings a little bit to most people is you get over the fear of failure that you have in your early 20s and 30s.
Mm.
And once you get over the fear of failure, you're actually able to explore, because you can only really. You can only really grow from a place of complete vulnerability. So if you're able to take yourself out of your comfort zone and not be so scared of what might happen.
Or what they might think, whoever there is there.
Or whatever failure means to somebody in any situation, then you can grow from that space. But you can't grow once you know, if you're holding on to your comfort zone, if you're holding on to that.
So I'll tell you what the key is. The key is the heart.
Mm.
It's being open and it's being vulnerable and it's being willing to connect. So we have had the most incredible pleasure experiences that you start out with a certain idea of sexual technique. So that's where a lot of people kind of come to a journey. They want to learn. They want to learn about the technique. They want to learn to be good. But the more that you get into the heart, the more it just takes you to these incredible places of pleasure, and you end up doing things with your body that afterwards you think about and you say, okay. So one of the workshops that I teach called The Art of Fucking, and it simply says that there is a real art to sex. So for most people, it's this little bit of friction that just kind of happens, and that's all they do. But when you really learn about the amazing sexual possibilities, it starts to change. So I look at some of the things that we've done and I say, okay, so I could put this in this workshop, but it's just another technique.
Yeah,
and without
another
the heart, it's just another technique. And that's all. The key is the heart.
Boom.
And when you open your heart, that's where it all happens.
Hmm.
Very, very simple. Will you?
It's not mine.
Oh.
It's yours.
Oh, it's mine. Well.
It's your vibrator. You left it on.
Absolutely.
Okay. We said many, many times, just keep it tucked into your ass. Just let it vibrate. It absorbs all the movements, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we need to do that.
Okay, so let's go back to what we're supposed to be talking about this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get
carried away into the heart and ass pleasure.
Yeah, see, Shanti and I often, we have this whole agenda of stuff that we want to talk about and these discussions we need to have, and we just get so distracted.
Well, I think you get like distracted, like youngsters, you know, just go into sex all the time, but yeah.
You can't believe the amount of sex that we are having.
That is amazing.
We would put 20-year-olds to shame.
I actually believe you, and I know you do. I know. I know. I've seen it. I know. Okay. It's not like, you know, my camera above your bed is, I'll remove it. But I really know.
You can leave it there.
We don't mind.
It doesn't bother us.
But you know, looking at you and your partner, Jonty, really brings the sentence, you connect. You truly have a vulnerable space between you. You truly touch raw. You touch raw. Anyway, let's go to getting undressed in front of a photographer.
How did you start taking erotic pictures?
What the fuck? What the fuck did you do? Why did you do that? It says on your business card, corporate photography and stuff. What happened there? Did they drink too much?
I guess it's a matter of mixing two passions.
Mm.
One is obviously a passion for photography or a creative side, and a passion for human form. And I think it goes beyond human form as well. It's really, I think erotica, in a sense, is almost like a timestamp of popular culture in a community at any given point in time. It kind of shows the morality of the culture. It shows the acceptability of sensuality and eroticism in the culture at any given time. I've been a photographer since I was at school, which is like I started in 1975. I got my first camera. I mean, most people that are listening probably weren't even around then. It was purely a hobby for quite a long time. I pursued a career in IT for many years, and then at some point in time, I decided to try and make a living out of it. So I went full time in the photography side. And at that point, I then obviously had the resources to try and follow some of my passion as well. So, yes, I have been, you're right, I've been doing corporate stuff. I've been teaching photography. Mm. I've been running workshops and classes for quite a long time. Obviously doing social events and corporate work, sure, and portraiture and product photography, all those sort of
I'm
things.
Sure general, made people also trust you, stuff, you know.
But to keep my passion alive, unfortunately, the one thing that really kills your passion for photography is taking it from amateur to professional. Yeah. But as soon as you do that,
every day is the same.
Well, it's not only about being the same, because every day is quite different, but your sole focus goes away from being creative and true, goes towards fulfilling a corporate brief.
Yeah.
And as soon as your client is telling you what they want, then your objective becomes giving them what they want rather than creating something that you think is phenomenal or brilliant. Yeah. So the way to kill your creativity as a photographer is go professional, because suddenly the whole role of what
almost
you do changes.
Almost in every profession. Yeah.
So right.
To fulfill my passion and to keep my creative side going, I started pursuing avenues of erotic photography. Mm. Obviously.
And art, which is art.
Well, yeah, it can be art. I think in some cases it can be art. Mm. Not in all cases.
Okay.
So let's go back a step and let's look at the word erotic, because it's a fascinating word.
Yes, it is.
What are the elements? What makes something erotic?
It's an intellectual process. It's mm-hmm. not a physical process. Mm-hmm. It's a process of how you think about how you perceive something. So a body could just be a body, or a body could be a sexual element, or a body could be a medical element. It's how you see that body. It's how you perceive it. So to me, Eros is the thought process and the fantasy process that happens behind sexuality and sensuality. It's very much part of the same thing, but it is divided from that. It's a non-physical process, Eros, that has a physical outlet, whereas sexuality itself is a physical process that has a non-physical outlet in a way.
Hmm. Okay. So, I really get that. Because for me, the prime element of something that's erotic or eroticism is a very personal connection to that.
It's a very personal connection.
It's a very sensual connection. So whether it's a smell, whether it's a taste, whether it's a vision,
right,
an image, it touches something inside of you. As a juxtaposition to porn, which is about the constant repetition of something that has no personal connection.
Right. So to me, that the whole thing about eroticism is what turns me on, what gets me going, what do I notice about a certain scene or about a certain, an actor scene, a group of people, whatever, in the space that I'm in. What is it that draws me into the focus? Where do I want to show? And I want to show people what my thinking is, my feeling is, etc. And obviously you want to instill an emotional response from photographs. That's usually what it's about, is to, as a photographer, if you get an emotional response from somebody that looks at your picture and goes, oh my God, that's wonderful, or oh, is that me, or I didn't think I looked like that, or I didn't think I could look like that, or, you know, oh my God, is that my lover, is that, you know, those are the kind of things that kind of...
So it needs any kind of response, and we don't put that as a negative or a positive. There's no judgment. If it touches something inside, then you've expressed that?
Yes, I think emotion, you know, the opposite of loving something is not hating it. Hate and love are very closely related emotions. They're at the top of the emotional cycle, if you want. The opposite of that is indifference. The opposite of love is indifference, and the opposite of hate is also indifference. So what you don't want, obviously, there's no not everybody's going to love every picture you take.
Yeah.
Okay. Not every picture that you take is going to instill an emotional response in somebody. And often the things that instill an emotional response in me don't instill the same response in others, and vice versa. I take some pictures that I don't think are particularly out there or unusual or wonderful in any way, and people go, oh, my God, that's why it's amazing. Or it's horrible. Or okay. It's, oh, my God, how can you focus, you know, that or that. I get more amazing than horrible, to be honest, but you know, there are people that look at the stuff that I take and are completely shocked because their moral standards don't fit into the stuff I do. I have a personal line. I don't do pornography, but I do erotica, kink.
Yeah. So what's the line? How do you define porn as opposed to erotica, for example?
Erotica to me has to have an element of the unknown, an element that's left to the viewer to interpret and to create around. Porn is very explicit. There's nothing left to the imagination at all. It's what you see is what you get. Mm. It's usually what you see is not really what you get because it's the show.
Yeah.
Whereas erotica is very suggestive. It's very suggestive. You lead the viewer into a point where you lead them thinking, what is underneath that slip of panty, or what is underneath, you know, what is happening just off the frame, or, you know.
So can erotica be explicit?
Erotica can be explicit. It can be explicit. Mm. Absolutely. But there is a difference between erotica and porn.
Yes.
Even explicit erotica.
Yes.
And porn.
Yeah. So for me, it's the context that defines it.
Can you see a context in a photo?
Because you can see the feeling.
Mm.
So I think that comes through very clearly.
Okay.
So what's the context? Is the context... For me, the context of erotica is that it touches something inside, whereas porn doesn't necessarily do that.
I hear you.
So porn is based purely on a physical arousal,
yes,
whereas erotic has an emotional connection.
Porn is essentially an unfulfilling process.
Yes.
It leaves the user with an emptiness in a way. It's a physical thing,
true.
Purely. Where true, I call it soul resetting sex, is very not that. It's a very fulfilling experience. And so people that are generally engulfed in the porn industry because they're not having true fulfillment will want more and more and more of the same thing to try and get some level of satisfaction out of it. But truly, you know this yourself, Jonty, truly soul resetting sex is not something that you need to repeat 3 times a day.
No.
You need to repeat it maybe once every couple of days, every couple of weeks, every couple of whatever it takes for you as an individual. Everyone's different, but if you really have that deep fulfillment out of that process, then it's not something you need to continually.
So it's not a need. So porn becomes almost like a need.
Well, it fills it tries to fill a void, but it's the wrong path to filling that void, in my opinion. And I mean, there are millions of people out there that, listen, the porn industry isn't one guy spending $10 billion a year.
No. Yeah.
So, yeah. So for me, the erotic is much more that there's some emotional connection to whatever that might be. It evokes some emotion inside of me. I don't know that porn actually connects to anything emotional.
Yes, either like an emotional connection or an intellectual connection or an intellectual question. It could make you question something that you took for granted, for instance. You know, you see something and you expect something, and you actually, what you see is something other than what you expect. It makes you question. It gives you a scope to engage with an image on a level that's not purely, this is what I'm seeing.
I really like that, because one of the principles that we use so much in the workshops and the last retreat we did in Mozambique was so much about this, was how we can use that sexual and erotic energy as a tool for inquiry.
Right.
Yeah. And there's even a workshop where we use erotic writing as a tool for inquiry, but the image can be exactly the same thing for personal inquiry and inquiry in my relationship.
Sure. So maybe if we get back to my path into erotic photography, it was really a need that I felt, firstly, to share the beauty that I was seeing in particular situations, and to try and capture my my view of that eroticism in a way. But it's a very personal thing. It's a very, as you say, eros is something different to everybody.
And it changes over time as we grow and change.
It evolves. It definitely evolves. There's no doubt. The way I think about sensuality, sexuality, erotica, etc., kink, fetish, all of those things, the way I think about them now as a 56-year-old man is very, very different to how I thought about them 5 years ago, and incredibly different to how I thought about, you're talking about 30. So, I mean, I had a very different view of everything when I was 30, a very different worldview.
For sure.
Yeah,
because I look at that. I look at things that used to turn me on or that I would find arousing, and now they have absolutely no impact, no connection, not even kind of a curiosity about looking or watching some of these things or reading some of them. It's like there's just nothing.
But it's life cycles. There's a, you know, there's a time to be, you know, a teenager has his own hormones, neurotransmitters running in his head. There's a certain biological cause, you know, when you're 20, 30, 40.
The problem is too many people get trapped in their patterns and they don't expand that.
That's true.
And they get caught in fantasy. I think a lot of people get caught in fantasy and never really get to the point where they are able to live through those fantasies so they don't replace them with other fantasies. I found that, you know, in my own experience anyway, is when you have a particular fantasy and you get to the point where you're, I've been very lucky, I've been through, outlived most of my fantasies or lived through most of my fantasies, they become realities and they change completely. So you then need to replace them with other fantasies. And so the process of evolution kind of happens.
Yeah. How did you go from the erotic to the kink? What was that journey?
I suppose, you know,
was the kink always there for you?
What is kink? Define kink. Define eros. I think there's many different flavors of kink as there are people in the world. Everybody's own eros is their own flavor of kink. Mm. And things that are acceptable to some people are completely disgusting to others and vice versa. I had my own flavor of if you want, perverted reality that I wanted to explore. I kind of went down that route. I got into the kink thing, and because I think I was taking at that, listen, today everyone's a photographer. Everyone's got a camera in their hand or in their pocket at any given time. Everybody's got the opportunity to do these things and take great pictures. Everybody is. But when I started it, it was less so. And so there was there was scope to kind of create images that people looked at and said, oh, I want to also appear in images like that. And
so people just wanted to express their perversion, or they wanted to look cool in leather clothes?
You know, there are many different motivations for doing things, okay? You can never really tell what an individual's motivation is, but in some cases the motivation would be to create a present that they could give to their lover or their partner, something they could put on the wall of their bedroom, or a photo book that they could present to their lover on occasion of their anniversary or
so a photo shoot is a photo shoot is a photo shoot. In the end of the day, you want to give it as a card.
It could be there's often, now this is really an interesting thing, there's often a fine line between being involved in a process and capturing the process. And erotic photography doesn't necessarily mean you're involved in the eros that's going down in front of you. Sometimes you're capturing other people doing that. Sometimes you're involved in a situation which is erotically charged and which is has images that you just really want to capture. So you'll stop and take a quick,
capture the moment.
Capture the moment. Show the person that you were. Say, hey, did you know that you looked like that in that particular moment? But it's really different to everybody. And the thing is, it's totally accessible. So there's no issue. You don't have to have a specific photographer come in and take these pictures for you. You can take them yourself. But I must say, one thing up front is you really, really need to get a consensual agreement with the people involved, in terms of what is going to be taken. And secondly, what the distribution cycle of those images is going to be. Where are they going to appear?
Are they going? Who's going to have them?
And we've done quite a few shows where we've spoken about those issues. We've looked at it legally, morally, socially, what happens in our world today. And it's fascinating because simply the access of a cell phone has changed so much of what we do.
Listen, every teenager is an erotic photographer, Every kid that sent a dick pic to a chick that he
wants
to impress.
That's not erotic.
Well, he's an erotic photographer, effectively.
He's more like a porn
photographer. Erotic photographer, what is that? That fine line again. But the thing is, it's accessible to everybody, and everybody's doing it. I think it's one of those things that should be more open about. We should just be more accepting of.
Okay.
But also very, very, very aware of kind of the potential that that sort of thing has to alter the course of life for another person.
Mm.
You know, somebody that's a lawyer, for instance, doesn't want to suddenly wake up and find pictures of them on Facebook's a bad example. Mm. Suddenly really allowed nudity there. But on social media, you don't want to wake up and find pictures of yourself that you didn't expect to be there and that
True.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. So let's go back to your journey of getting into that world of your understanding and your expression of kink. What came first? Was it your personal exploration, or was it the pictures, or were they kind of really entwined? Yes.
That was the first thing that happened. Then there was light.
And then there was light, and then the heavens and the earth were created. And
let's not play with our listeners' minds too much. Like, oh no, I got it.
To answer your question, you know, photography is—it's a bit like driving a car in a way. There's a certain amount of technology that you need to understand. There's a certain technical competence that you have to have in order to drive a vehicle from point A to point B. Now, when you first start driving, if you can cast your mind back to when you first got a license, it was all about which gear to be in, which pedal to have in, all of these sort of things, the technicalities of driving. But there comes a time in that process, in that learning process, when it goes away, you stop worrying about the technicalities and you start worrying about more about the destination. Okay, so you'll get in the car and it'll be, I want to go from here to there. What's my quickest way to get there? It's not about which gear you're in and that kind of thing. And photography is very much the same thing. So you do need to have a certain set of fundamental skills and a certain understanding of the technology and a usability of the technology to take it into the next level. For me, I've been into photography for a very, very, very long time. I think I don't really know what came first, to be honest. I think it was a desire to capture the intense kind of passion that I felt for sexuality and sensuality. And then I got really interested in what other people found kinky, erotic, exciting, different.
Yeah.
So I started going to some of the local kink parties and got known as a guy that could take nice pictures, and people would approach me and etc. So I kind of got going like that. But right in the beginning, it was really, really difficult to find people that were kind of comfortable taking their clothes off to let you take pictures of them. So
across the spectrum.
Across the spectrum. You know what? When you're starting out, you'll take what you can get. Eh?
Yeah.
So I used to spend quite a lot of time trolling, for instance, dating sites, looking for pictures of people that I thought I could do better pictures of, that would help sell them better. I sort of put my profile out on a variety of different sites as an erotic photographer, looking for people, looking for subjects, not as somebody looking for a date, not as somebody looking to get laid, but as an erotic photographer looking for... honesty is very important in the process, yeah. I really believe. It's the most important part of the whole process. Is what is your intention? Put it out there. People that are interested in that intention can respond, and the people that don't like that don't have to.
That's something... Jonty, I don't know if you remember one of your students that... Never mind, I'm not going to mention things. But one of your students, he's a photographer as well, and he said that usually when he does erotic photo shoots or, you know, things that has to do with, you know, journey and sensuality, kink, so on, sometimes there's a bond forming between the, you know, the subject.
Very often that does happen.
And a lot of women came up to him and said, I'm actually so turned on because of, you know, that whole adrenaline rush, and I'm exposed and I'm vulnerable in front of you. And he said he has to actually be extremely professional about it. I'm sure after, you know, we all make mistakes. But
yes, it's actually a decision I made a long time ago when I started doing this, is that whilst I was in that process of being the photographer, I didn't want to cross the boundary of also being a participant in order to keep it professional. And I must say, though, in the instances where there are times where you get this connection with the person that you're shooting in a very intimate space, and I would never ever make an advance or make the first move or whatever, but there are times when people have sort of taken that energy and turned it around, and I must say those do lead to some interesting encounters.
They do indeed. I'm very familiar with that space.
For sure.
On a lot of levels. And it's a fascinating space to explore in terms of the humanity of us as a spectator in that, or as a guide. And at some point, that changes.
Yes.
And if you're conscious in that, you learn an amazing amount. Sometimes through the mistakes that you make.
Yes.
Where you look at something afterwards and say, I could have done that differently.
Yeah.
No question of that. And we expand ourselves in that. And more, speaking purely for myself, our intention in that becomes clearer.
Yeah. My kind of outset has always been to be almost removed from the thing and take. The other thing I must tell you, and this is really goes to my particular mode of operation, the way I work, the way I try and continually create content that's fresh and new and exciting.
Yeah.
A lot of photographers will go into a situation and say, right, I need to control the situation to deliver the result that I want.
Mm.
Model A sit here, model B sit there, do that, wear that, etc. I tend to approach it very differently because if I'm continually guiding other people to my flavor, standard, taste, visions, then all I'm going to be doing is creating more and more of the same stuff. Mm. So I try and create a space where people are comfortable, happy, and relaxed.
Mm.
And say, be yourself, and I'll capture the moment.
Mm.
And by doing that, everybody that comes into my space, into my studio, everybody brings their own unique flavor of energy, their own unique flavor of eroticism, their own unique flavor of morality. And by standing back and just letting them be, capturing the moment, to me, I get much better results than trying to direct the moment to that point. And it does, in a way, it's been a differentiator for me all along. I've done many, many model portfolios, for instance, and that's one of those things where model portfolio photographers specifically will come along. They'll bring people through like a cattle factory. Stand here, do that. Turn here, up, turn down, left, right. Next, please. Mm. I've specifically been very pedantic about avoiding that method of doing things. Mm. There are occasions where you're sucked into that. Corporate portraiture is one of those. Yeah. But, you know, certainly in the space where I'm allowed to be creative, I would rather encourage people to be themselves and capture the moment. And you get some incredibly intense moments that you're then able to, like, get to. You create a nice space. You create the nice lighting, a nice warm atmosphere, nice music, depending on who it is, and then capture the moment. It's like it's so easy. It's almost like taking candy from babies.
Yeah. But that becomes a true expression of sensuality and eroticism because it's about flow.
Exactly.
You can't contrive that.
Exactly.
And you can't create that. You
exactly.
can create the atmosphere and the context.
And it also creates a very true reflection of the morality of the people that you're shooting.
Mm.
It allows them to create the flavor.
Mm.
And you just do the tech. You just take the pictures.
And then
so that's interesting. What do you mean? Your understanding of the use of that word in that space, morality.
Morality is whatever it is to individuals. I think.
Are you using that in terms of boundary?
Morality is. It could be boundary. It could be a physical thing. It could be how open you're prepared to be in front of a camera. What you're prepared to expose for other people to see, whether it be just your partner or. Or a more open environment. Mm. Morality is really how we see, how we behave in communities, I would imagine. Mm. How we, you know, what our expectations are of other people in a community environment.
Mm.
Now, I think that as a species, we've probably got this really wrong. As a species, we've tended, governments have found it easier to outsource morality to religion over time. Mm. And have taken away the responsibility of guiding people themselves. And because of the vast disquiet there is between the various religions, there's so many different like flavors of morality, and there's so many flavors, as many people as there are flavors of morality.
Yeah.
You can't dictate to somebody else what they are going to be comfortable doing or what they're going to be comfortable showing or what they're going to
be. Yeah, and context often creates that.
Exactly.
We've seen that so many times in various situations where people come into, let's say, a workshop situation and say, oh, I could never do that. And in a certain context, all of a sudden, that seems really natural.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So instead of me forcing an act or a process I create a space, let people interact with the space and capture the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And that really frees people to explore and express themselves. So a beautiful part of this, again, comes back to this idea of using an experience like this as a tool for inquiry.
Absolutely.
That, how do you feel while it's happening? How do you feel afterwards when you see the pictures? What impact does it have on your relationship, on your sexuality?
Absolutely. I think a really, really important thing to kind of realize as well is that most of us at some level have issues and hang-ups about our bodies. I know certainly there are very few women that I know that think that they're perfect. Actually, they might flutter around and say, oh, look, I'm perfect. But the reality is, you know, when the curtains come down, when the rubber hits the road and you're standing in front of the mirror, what are the bits that you love about yourself and what are the bits that you don't? Now, in an erotic situation, okay, you can actually accentuate the beauty of somebody's form and actually isolate elements of their form and present that as a particularly a very engaging thing. So I could take a picture of a woman, for instance, that doesn't necessarily think that she has great legs or great bum or whatever, and take a picture of her in good light, in light that is used in such a way that you hide the blemishes and you enhance the shape and the form, etc. And I'll show her that picture and she'll go, oh my God, is that really me? That can't be me. I can't believe that is me.
And is it really her? You know, sometimes I look at photos these days.
It is absolutely. Yeah. It is totally, completely her. Because it's a matter of the perception that, of the perception that you have of that person in that time. And that perception is jaded by the kind of light that you're using, obviously. And in that moment of sexuality, in that moment of sensuality, when she's presenting herself at her absolute best to be taken and deflowered. Okay. It's like photographing a woman on her wedding day, a bride on her wedding day. Okay, that's as good as she's going to get, but that is her, and that is the person, and that's maybe the slimmest she'll ever be, maybe the least wrinkled she'll ever be, the happiest she'll ever be, the best dressed she'll ever be, and with more of her family around than she'll ever have, okay? But that is still her in the middle.
So you know what comes to me as you say that, and again, it's a beautiful parallel of things, is that when you look at somebody like that, you're looking at them through the eyes of a lover.
Exactly.
And if I look at my partner through the eyes of a lover at age 20 and at age 50 and at age 80, the love is what comes through more than looking at the judgment of a visual of the way that her body is going
to
change.
Exactly. And if you can use that tool to actually elevate somebody's perception of themselves, their self-image, why not?
Because it's just a different aspect of themselves. That's
a big
all.
Thing.
Why not? You know, why not? If I appreciate your legs in that particular shape, in that light, why can't I capture that moment and share it with you and show you what it is that I'm appreciating, what it is that I'm enjoying? And
true.
In the space of an erotic shoot, for a partner to be present or not, what do you think about that? Does it add to it? Does it take it away? Is it a personal thing? Is everybody different?
Yes, everybody's different. There are times where people have turned up for a shoot with a partner and I've asked the partner to leave.
Really?
Relationships are relationships. There are no two that are the same. Some relationships are more controlling than others. Some relationships have higher expectations of others. But I find that when people come for that, they want to explore their own space and often their partner will taint that space in some way. Now, it's not always necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes you'll have someone that's quite shy and their partner will be more open and more and be happy to drag them out of the shyness. Yeah. But more often than not, the partner's morality, the partner's idea of what should happen gets basically painted on the scene.
And it taints
that. It's almost like
tamed. It's like it's also I'm not gonna be myself if I have my partner there.
They'll show what they think their partner will accept.
Yes, exactly. They'll act within the boundaries of their relationship rather than acting within the boundaries of their own sensuality and sexuality. Relationships are defined by different things.
Yeah, when couples contact me for a tantric massage experience for her, it becomes a very similar conversation that the partner says he wants to be there. And in that space, often she will not allow herself to let go fully because she wouldn't do that with him.
Sure. Having said that, though, I mean, I've done many, many sessions with couples and with, in some cases, threesomes, you know, gay couples or both genders. I've done many situations with all of these varieties of things, and each case is a unique case that you look at it as a unique example. You try not to sort of create a blanket rule that applies to everybody. Be very open-minded. Be very kind of gentle about about the process of removing a partner if they are affecting the process. There are times when I haven't been able to do that, and I've just said to both of them, look, go away rather, and come back another day one at a time. Or
Wow. Like that?
Like that.
Okay.
It's not working for me. I'm not getting what I want. It's a forced situation. It's like forcing a round peg into a square hole.
Were you approached
ever? Well, if you have enough lube and time and patience, if you have enough lube, enough time, enough patience, and enough technique, you'll get anything almost in anywhere.
Were you approached by people from the lifestyle, from, let's say, Kingsters, that like a sub and a master?
Absolutely.
So that's fine. Then you can do the photo shoot because they both share the same perception.
Well, in some cases, a sub will approach you and say, I'd like to give my master or my dominant a present for a birthday or for a special event or whatever. I'd like to do this shoot. And then if you know, so every case is different. Everyone has a different motivation for doing it. Everyone, you know, the thing you were talking about earlier about the line between being engaged in the process.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's a certain element of excitement to voyeurism alone, just to being in the
same
room.
And to be a photographer, you have to be a voyeur.
You have to be a voyeur, exactly. But to be a voyeur, you can't be a participant. In fact, by definition,
you're not a perv coming to peep. You're a voyeur.
You're a voyeur. Mm. You're engaged in that process, but not physically.
You're involved, but not engaging. Right. You have to see the whole picture.
So you know, it becomes just kind of a fascinating sort of. In a way, it's almost like a mental masturbation exploration in a way. So quantum physics shows us that simply by the act of observing anything, we tend to impact on it.
Of course.
Simply by the act of observation and our presence in it.
We are just energy fields.
That's it.
And as energy fields interact, either on a very hardcore direct level or even very, you know, magnets interface with each other even when they're not like clunked together. They have this, yes.
So it's kind of... It's this beautiful understanding that I'm getting of more and more of life, that every moment in life is this paradoxical space where you're engaged and you're separate.
Right.
And that's the space that you're in.
Right.
In that.
Let me give you a fairly odd analogy, but if you come across, let's say, a crime being committed and you happen to have a camera in your hand, do you stop the crime from being committed or do you stop yourself and take pictures of the crime being committed so that it can be... It's one of those weird things.
It's a philosophical question.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
But it's a philosophical question that every single photographer faces every time they pick up a camera.
Wow.
Yeah.
So unwrap it.
I had a moment. Yeah, we can go back to that. On Facebook this week, that horrified me. Simply because being in the realm of sexuality, I'm incredibly careful of what I post on Facebook.
Sure.
And over the years, you know, so many of my colleagues have been banned for various times because of the things that they post. And I actually saw this week a murder on Facebook.
I saw too, a young kid that got beaten up. No, not that one.
Yes, I think so. It was in Pakistan.
Okay.
Anyway, and so it was actually...
It was documented.
Yes, and all of the people around, so there's all these men around, and they are actually showing you this man being beaten to death. And I look at this, and I look at... the fact that somebody might post a picture of a bare breast and they're banned from Facebook for a month. And I look at this incredibly fucked up space have created and what we are showing our children.
I saw one this morning of a young
up.
Kid that got beaten up by two other kids with sticks and stuff, and the kid eventually died from his injuries. Yeah. But it's horrific that we have to actually see that stuff on social media. I think it's horrific that it happens. You know, what we as humans do to each other is just completely unacceptable.
How a child that is exposed to this supposed to be in touch with his emotions and get to his sensuality?
And
it's almost a paradox.
Men and women and this whole thing of the model of masculinity that we are creating.
It's horrific.
Well, it's not new. It's been around.
It has been. And
I think what is new, though, is the awareness.
Yeah.
I think there's a social media, the internet has created flattened global geography to the point that everybody has the same set of fundamental knowledge in their pocket at any given time.
Generally speaking, yes.
And so what's happened is that we've all become, In the old days, we used to grow up under our parents' umbrella, and we knew no better. And our parents would usually choose the school that we went to based on their morality and their idea of what should happen. Mm. So the teachers that you support the exact same things that your parents support. So that's what you knew. That's what you did. Mm. And there were very few avenues to actually explore beyond that. But these days, it's not like that. You know, people make up their own minds based on the knowledge that they have and the access of the to knowledge to other people of similar thinking, etc. The world's changed a lot.
So Charlie, Cindy wants to take you to Dublin to do a photo shoot for her.
Cindy.
Yeah, she's a wonderful woman.
She's one of our wonderful listeners. She lives in Dublin. She's a South African.
Hey, Cindy, how are you doing?
And she'd love to take you.
Well, she's coming to visit from time to time, so maybe she doesn't even need to fly you there, even though it will be more exciting.
I'd love to go to Ireland to do it, but I'd be equally happy to do it here. Just let me know when.
You travel light. Only a camera, a few lenses. Yeah. Do you go digital? You obviously.
Yeah, very much digital these days. Yeah,
these days are crazy. Yeah, it's like changed. Yeah. But still, all those. What do you take? A Canon? What is your. Who do you support?
Don't swear at me.
Don't swear at me.
Okay, so firstly, let's just get this brand orientation thing. It's not something that I engage in, because to me, a camera is a camera.
Okay.
And whether you spend 20,000 Rand on your Nikon or 15,000 Rand on your Canon or whatever it is, it's not about the technology. It's about what you do with the technology.
Yeah. Sure.
That's the first thing. I happen to use Nikon.
And who's operating the technology.
But I've been in a Nikon
technology.
House for a long time, but it's not, it's really, I've shot events and someone will give me a Canon and I'll shoot it on a Canon. Or a Hasselblad. If I could afford a Hasselblad, I'd probably use it. Mm. It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
What really matters, the best camera that you can possibly use for erotic photography or any other photography for that matter is the one that's in your hand right now. Mm. Whatever's in your hand, take the picture.
Okay? Just capture
just
the moment.
Just take the picture. Yeah. Stop worrying about it. Just take the picture. Okay, one thing I will tell you, though, the thing that really matters to me a lot, photography, the word photography is a Greek word made up of two subwords, photo and graphy. Graphy means to write, but photo means light. Okay, and photography is about writing with light. Okay, now... that, by definition, means it's not so much about the camera, but about the lighting situation that you have to capture. Yeah. And that's what I try and do. I'm very pedantic about the light that I use, specifically in erotic photography. You don't need expensive lighting. Single source lighting's often. I've taken some of my best pictures ever. I've taken with a single candle as the only light source in the entire room. Okay.
Wow.
And I can show them to you. They're brilliant. They're the ones that I love the most.
Let's tweet a few.
One piece of advice that you would give to somebody taking pictures with a cell phone.
Turn off the flash.
Okay, put your privacy settings first and then turn off your flash.
Yeah, make sure that the flash is... Look, flash is designed to illuminate a scene, okay? Mm. The problem is that three-dimensionality is caused by shadow on a light surface. Mm. So on a light-skinned person, the three-dimensionality of the form is defined by not where the light falls, but where the light doesn't fall.
Okay.
On a dark-skinned person, however, that reverses. So their three-dimensionality is caused by what we call spectral flare. So there you create a spectral flare, you create a reflection of your light source on the person's skin and capture the reflection. It's a fairly technical thing. But fundamentally, three-dimensional form is created by shadow. Shadow is created by the diversity or the difference in position between the source of the light and the camera. Okay. So by keeping your source of the light on the camera, you're flattening your three-dimensionality, which is great for taking party shots because you want to get everyone's face illuminated, but the background not. So, that kind of thing. But when it comes to erotic photography, what you're doing is you're flattening your subject. So you're taking a three-dimensional form, which is beautiful and voluptuous and wholesome in its natural state, and you're throwing light on it that flattens it completely, and you're taking away the three-dimensionality and creating a flat surface, a flat plane of light. So the first thing you want to do is really separate your light source from your camera. The easiest way to do that on a cell phone is to turn off the flash. And then whatever light source you have, your camera will work quite well to actually adopt and absorb the light sources that you have.
Okay. That's really interesting, because you've actually put something in a beautiful space for me Because this week I've been looking at the light falling on trees, especially...
Isn't that phenomenal?
Especially as dusk is approaching and the sun is setting.
And this autumn time when the leaves are starting to change color, you get the yellows and the reds and this golden light that sits behind it.
The light is incredible on it.
Absolutely beautiful.
And I realized there's no way I could ever kind of capture that because I have no idea of the skill of what you need to do that.
Right.
But it's been the most beautiful moments. And when you've said that photography is the capture of light... I've never looked at it like that before.
It's light,
really
light,
beautiful.
Light in their moment. So. You know, the number one habit of highly effective people, according to Stephen R. Hawkins, who wrote that book about seven habits of highly effective people, the number one habit is that they all start with the end in mind. And if we go back to what we were talking about driving a car earlier, you get into your car and you say, I want to go there, not I want to be in first gear and then in second gear and then third gear. You start with the end in mind, and so it is with photography as well. When you come into the place where you're about to take a picture, you should be thinking to yourself, what is it that I want to capture? Mm. What is it that I want to show on this picture? And then all the technology kind of falls in behind that. So if you want a low light picture that has a lot of mood to it and a lot of – that's one thing, then use single source lighting. Mm. If you want a very a high key photo with lots of light, that's cool. But look at what it is that you want to achieve when you set out on that path, because – if you just set out on a path without an idea of what that destination is, wherever you arrive at will not be your destination. Okay? You can't get to a destination if there isn't a known destination. So if you have an idea of where you want to go to, it's much easier to actually get there, whether it's by the technology. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just looking at your photos. Amazing. So I'm sure some of them you took. But do you have also a website only for the erotic photography?
I have a couple of portfolios. My Flickr portfolio is massive, and there's a specific section on that which is restricted, and that has a lot of the nude erotic.
So your name
boudoir.
On Flickr is?
It's Charles Heyman, I think.
Flickr, yeah.
We'll
find it.
Photos Charles H.
We're going to just tweet it now.
Yeah.
And if people want to contact you to find out more and to have the experience of a shoot,
you want email? What sort of contact details do you want?
Yeah, email's great.
My email is charles@immediate. That's spelled IMEDI and the number 8. That's India Mike Echo Delta India and the number 8.co.za. And they can always phone me on 082. WhatsApp me, phone me on 082-558-7077.
Cool.
We'll put it up there.
Let's
up
go
now.
Back to a peenicorn.
A peenicorn.
Before you get onto a peenicorn, what is the collective noun for a group of photographers?
What?
Do you know?
No, I have no idea.
No idea. I like collective nouns.
I think it's a click.
A click.
That's cool.
A click with a CK or a QUE.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, both.
Both of them.
Okay. Depends what kind of photographers they are.
Because we often play with that. Like we look at
photo clubs would be a clique.
We look at sexual terms and we think, what would the collective noun of this be? So a peenicorn is a mythical penis who, according to its owner, is so big that it's a myth.
That is ridiculous. It's like, okay, it's like a unicorn penis.
That's what a peenicorn is.
I don't
is.
Know if women really think it's a myth, because it's like, nah, let's keep it in the world of unicorns. Yeah. I need something that goes in, not
guys,
like 10 tons of lube, you know? Don't
need that. And I have to tell you, this is a really interesting thing, and we're actually going to add it to this workshop, to the art of fucking. Because a lot of guys think that the only thing that's of value is a really hard erection. And the simple truth is, in pleasure, there are so many awesome possibilities with half erect and soft cocks that are mind blowing. So get out of the idea of performance and get into the idea of possibility. Very interesting thing I am doing on Tuesday night.
Tell us.
Tuesday night, we are doing a workshop on communication. Relationship communication, which becomes life communication, and sexual communication. So I've actually created this really beautiful evening. So you want to learn to communicate in your relationship and what stops clear communication. So if you've ever felt that you are talking about totally different things with your partner, come find out why and how you can change it. And if you'd like to communicate more clearly, and if you'd like to communicate with greater intimacy and depth, come join us on Tuesday night. So go to my Facebook page, and the information is on there as an event that's in Johannesburg on Tuesday night.
I found, John T, the reason I think it's so important, this workshop, is because sometimes we find the courage to talk, but then we want to know how to say things that are really, we are not fulfilled, we're not satisfied, we are irritated, and then also how to respond when you just heard something that your partner told you that you're not doing great or not doing well.
So one of the things of this is the purpose of communication, and that becomes really important as to why.
No, not blaming. No. Yeah.
And what is the purpose of going into a communication, and how do we create clarity on that so we find fulfillment? And then we're actually going to look at some sexual communication techniques of how you can have a whole lot more pleasure just simply through communicating better.
Wonderful.
And that's not about changing anything that you do. It's changing the way that you communicate about it, which I've actually never said before, which is really, really interesting.
And that amplifies for me the reality of sometimes when you want to communicate, you have to stop sex. You know, like you're in the moment and then and you don't know how to say things like, oh, yeah, continue, or I wanted more. Or you actually need to learn how to keep the flow.
I think one of the things that you do a lot is you bring you allow humor to come into it as well. So don't take yourself too seriously.
Absolutely.
And my one point that I want to leave everybody with from a photographic point of view is, allow yourself to have those jokes, to be humorous, to not take it too seriously, and just to play and experiment and have fun.
That's very it. Cool.
I have really enjoyed chatting with you. I always enjoy our time together, and so this has been really cool. It's like a whole other dimension of stuff that we haven't spoken about before. Hmm.
It's awesome. I've loved my time. Thank you for having
me. Thank you so much. Baby, if you're listening, and if you're not, this is for you. I wish you all so much pleasure. CliffCentral.com.